There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
Oi, oi, you're listening to The Grill. We're broadcasting live from Burasti, where the game is always on. If you are in the vicinity, would you please come on down and say hi, because it would be great to hear from you. If you can't make it down here, if you haven't got a pink ticket, if you're not allowed out, if you're doing one of those weird ones like dryannery or veganery or whatever it might be, then feel free to just text in your thoughts as well, and we'll send you loads of pictures of how beautiful it is down here and what a great crowd we've got in. How do you get in touch? At Dubai Eye Sport, at Dubai Eye 1038 FM, hashtag Dubai Eye 1038. All the boys are on their individual social media platforms as well, so reach out on there or text us on 4001. Thank you very much indeed for the text messages coming in already today. Thanks very much indeed to whoever sent in the text message on the back of our Marko Arnautović conversation about a possible move to China. The message was along the lines of, surely his new club, should he move, his new club putting up the money would not want to hear Marko or his Daniel talking about the money he's going to earn over there. They want him to come over there and win titles.
Well, then they're deluded to think there's any other reason that he's going over there, I think. I guess it's a fair argument, but that is why he's going.
Honesty.
Could be going, should I say.
That's why he's going. Right, we've got football going on for you, ongoing for you at the moment. 39 minutes in, early kickoff in the Premier League. It's a London derby. It's the Hammers against the Gunners.
Yeah, and it's a pretty good game, actually, Tom. It may be 0-0, but there has been some real wonderful pockets of football, especially outside the area. The neat passages of play between the respective front threes. So, as we mentioned, Arnautović, and then Nasri and Felipe Anderson for West Ham. They carved out an absolute beauty of a chance a minute ago. A long ball over the top. Arnautović plucked it out of the sky, laid it into Nasri, who just has this wonderful way of keeping the ball really close to his feet, taking a couple of defenders out of the game without really moving anywhere. And in his periphery, saw Anderson, rolled it to the side, and Anderson, I think, really should have hit the target. He was about 18, 19, 20 yards out, pulled it just wide of the post. But a beautiful passage of play. Up the other end, Alex Iwobi, again, continuing his train of form. He played a nice little ball into Matteo Guendouzi, who himself struck beautifully, again, just wide. There's definitely goals in this, and I'm starting to thinking that this isn't going to be the easy game for Arsenal that I thought it might be.
We'll keep an eye on the cricket for you. We'll also have regular updates from the rugby. European Cup action is back underway. Our man Mark Archer has been found out on course. They've worked out who he actually is and thrown him off course, and he's made his way back up here to Burasti to be part of proceedings a little later on. So he's got a tale or two to tell, which I'm sure, well, I know he's going to be telling us a little later on. In the meantime, though, Leinster have taken an early lead against Toulouse in Pool 1. It's still 0-0 between Montpellier and Newcastle Falcons. Chris McGarty over there is talking all things Asian Cup and Aussie sport. He's got a very special guest as well.
I certainly do, yeah. Matt Byrne, who is a proud Aussie, who has been following the Socceroos very closely at the start, the opening week of the AFC Asian Cup 2019. Just a result to give you from earlier today. It did finish Vietnam 0, Iran 2, and it was Sardar Azmoun with 2 goals for Iran. A little later, 5:30 PM, and taking on Iraq, that the second of the Group D matches today, and then that will be followed later this evening. Group E, it is Lebanon taking on Saudi Arabia. I want to come back just very quickly on this, Matt, and I appreciate there's an awful lot to discuss in the world of Aussie sport, but just on the Asian Cup, you were talking there about your beloved Australia, that they are one of the favourites to go on and retain their title. You were saying as well you fancy Iran. Of the teams you've seen, who else can we expect to be there or thereabouts come the back end of this 2019 edition?
I watched South Korea and Japan the other day, who actually, again, I wasn't too overly impressed with them. I feel like these teams, again, are just going through the motions at the moment and things will really click into gear round of 16. But I still think it will come from either Iran, South Korea, or Australia, but that might be me being biased. But I think I can't see any other teams. I mean, Saudi Arabia, if they get things going as well, and hopefully UAE, if they can get the home support, which they will, with a huge crowd at their game with India the other night with 43,000. If that keeps up, you never know. I think that's how Australia got that ride last time in 2015 with the home support, had a couple of close round of 16 quarterfinals, and then we eventually won it. So it'd be great for the country if UAE can pull something out of the bag.
Absolutely, it would. You're absolutely spot on to point that out as well. A full house down at the Mohammed bin Zayed Stadium on Thursday evening for that match, UAE defeating India by 2-0. Now then, Matt, you're not going to want to do this, but we're going to have to. We were just talking about it off air there. To be an Aussie sports fan right now, it's not the greatest, because the cricket team have had their struggles. Okay, victory, we'll get to them in a second. The rugby union side have had to bring in outside help to give Michael Cech a little helping hand in what is a World Cup year. AFL, okay, you own that, so you're doing all right there. But
we're the world champions.
Yeah, you are the world champions of AFL. It's a bit like the Americans with the NFL exactly. as well. But talk to me about it. What's going on with Aussie sport right now?
Yeah, it's tough, and you know, obviously being an expat as well, you know, I'm away from Australia, so people like to, and being around a lot of Brits as well, they like to see us suffer. So yeah, with the cricket, I mean, we're not going great. Obviously, we had the win today, but Test, and there's a lot of interesting squad selections at the moment, which is copping a lot of flack back home, with Langer in charge, you know, and their selections just keep repeating, like Mitch March, which is, he's always under fire. So yeah, cricket wise not looking great. Rugby also, you know, we had a good run with Australian sport for quite a long time. You know, I remember as a kid growing up with the Australian cricket team, we just never lost. So yeah, I mean, I feel like we're in new eras for all our three sort of major sports, including the Socceroos, which is kind of exciting. But you know, it's tough when you're used to winning a lot and everyone else giving it to you.
Well, I will point out to you another. I'll kick you when you're down a little bit. India's first Test series success down under, I think 1946, 47 or 47, 48 is when they begun touring, did India. A first success for them. Australia forced to follow on for the first time in 30 years as well in that third Test. But talk to me about Steve Smith, David Warner and Cameron Bancroft. An awful lot written, an awful lot said about those three men in 2018. Has all the furores died down? Or are Aussies now saying, hey, we need these three and we need these three badly?
I would say it was dying down. And then Bancroft came out and did an interview with, I think it was Channel 9 back home for the cricket. Actually, it wasn't Channel 9. But yeah, and I think that then fueled it up again, because Warner still stayed very silent about it all. And he's the one getting sort of pigeonholed every time that he was the main man and everything like that. So that, I mean, that's no good for anyone, but we want Steve Smith and David Warner playing, especially them two, because, you know, so their ban's not going to be shortened or anything like that. They'll be back playing eventually when it lifts. I can't even remember when it is, but it did die down for a bit. It was obviously a disgraceful time for Australian sport. You know, there wasn't one Aussie who was sitting there trying to make excuses. It was just embarrassing, really, and something we're not used to. But handled very badly, I think, too, by Cricket Australia, right from the first press conference. So, yeah, hopefully we get them back when they're banned and they come back into the form they will. I guess it'll take them a while. There'd be probably a few sort of demons in their heads as well, a lot of pressure on their shoulders. But we're looking forward to seeing them back in the side.
It is a big year for cricket, lest we forget. ICC Cricket World Cup, May time, over in England and Wales. And then there is the small matter of an Ashes for Australia and England this year as well. A little closer to home, it is what we like to describe as the sporting season, Matt. The weather is beautiful. We've got golf events aplenty in the coming weeks. We then move into the Dubai Jury Free Tennis Championship, which we're looking forward to. So much going on. And the AFL Middle East as well. Of course, you are a proud, the pioneer in many respects of it over here. You're at the forefront of it. Give us a little rundown. How is the season? How is the sport evolving more than anything else out in this part of the world?
Yeah, let's talk about a sport we're good at. yeah, AFL Middle East, yeah, it's going well. We're halfway through the season. We always have a break over this New Year Christmas period. Round four will kick off on the 25th of January. Which will be a double header, because Australia Day is the 26th, which I believe Barasti's having a big bash as well. It's always a big day for Australians back home. So, but we'll be playing on the Friday, and it'll be a double header, so all four teams playing at Dubai Sports City. But yeah, it's. I mean, AFL Middle East have been involved since I landed in the UAE. It seems to be growing. We're getting more interest from other people. We've got a great sponsor now, The Entertainer, so I'll give them a plug. But yeah, we're still working on getting Bahrain back involved. They're still there, not officially. And the Oz kick and the kids there, that's always going to be growing because the expat community, we love AFL. It's the number one sport back home, especially if you're from down Victoria way. Up north, it's more rugby, but it still is the most popular. There's the most money in it with the AFL back in Melbourne.
We always seem to come back to this subject, or certainly I do whenever I catch up with you, and it's almost like a 6-monthly thing that we get a little catch-up, certainly a yearly thing when it comes to all things AFL Middle East. Talk to me about other people from other parts of the world getting involved in this. Are you still tapping into that? Are you still tapping into not just the Aussies that are taking up the sport?
Yeah, 100%. We encourage anyone to come play, and it's funny how you always get that reaction of, some people haven't even heard of the sport, which still blows my mind, but I just know that's about us being a bit naive over in Australia. It's a long way away. But, yeah, we encourage a lot of people. A lot of the Irish get involved because it is quite similar to Gaelic, and we do play against Ireland in an international rules format with the professional guys back home. And we also are doing that here. We play against Muscat, who used to have an AFL side, but not at the moment, but they're still affiliated. But the international rules is a great option. But yeah, we encourage everyone because especially for kids too, it's such a great sport because you can do everything. You mark, you kick, you handball as we call it. You don't throw the ball in like in rugby. But there's something for everyone and it's always action. So it's great for all nationalities.
Tempted, Mr. Rucker, to take up the sport of Aussie rules?
A keen observer of the sport of Aussie rules because I understand that, and I know this is a great debate that usually goes late into the night, into the wee small hours. But, I've been a keen observer of the game for many years. And there are those that claim that Aussie rules players, the top of their game, are compare and contrast to other sports, the fittest athletes in sport. And you can sort of see that to a certain degree, the amount of ground they have to cover, but also the different attributes that you've got to be able to have as a player.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, that's... you have to be an athlete, and these days they actually now are looking at targeting athletes. Someone like Mason Cox, who is a guy from Texas, hadn't picked up a football until 4 or 5 years ago. Collingwood targeted him, Collingwood's my team, and he was the star of the show in the prelim final in 2018, won it off his own boot basically, and he only picked up the ball 4 years ago. So, but he's 200 centimetres, he's an athlete. So those capabilities is a must. You've got to be fit, you've got to be agile, you've got to be able to run around a huge, basically the size of a cricket oval. Yeah. You've got to be expected to be tackled from all angles. So there's so many aspects that make these guys supreme athletes.
And all in really tight shorts as well.
We do like the tight shorts, and I still can't explain why. And we also wear singlets or vests, as some people call it. And we play in the middle of winter. And
I mean, could you, if you wanted to be really different, if you wanted to have a pog moment or something like that, and play in a long sleeve, could you?
You can. No, long sleeves are allowed. They do. I mean, trust me, when I was playing back in July in Melbourne,
you're not sent to Coventry by your teammates or anything like that. No, they don't look at you funny.
No, there is a bit of that, though. Some of the old school coaches, if they saw you pulling a long sleeve jumper when it was wet, They'd be like, you're not going to have a good game because your head's not in the game.
Yeah, I've got to say, I've witnessed firsthand just the pre-season with which the AFL boys go through. Adelaide used to come up here and train at Maidan, and I have seen grown men violently sick with some of the just training methods. The 100-100s, is that commonplace? The 100-100 metre sprints with about 10 seconds gap in between each one. And it's something to behold, let me tell you.
Yeah, I'm telling you, I've never done that. But that was an old school one that I used to like pulling out. But I think clubs still do it, and it's just ridiculous.
It's scary.
You wouldn't see me doing that.
It's scary. I remember, Tom, you might recall this, when we were down from our vantage point up here on the rooftop to being back down on the main deck here at Barasti, Darren Burgess. Yeah. Remember him? He joined us, who was the fitness man, formerly with Brendan Rodgers at Liverpool, then went down, was working with Adelaide, I believe it was.
And Port Adelaide.
And he's now with Arsenal Football Club as the head of science, nutrition and fitness and all things. So, again, it's about cross-pollination. There's a guy who's deep-rooted in football, who's went across the AFL and has now been headhunted by Arsenal because of the fitness levels. Because what, 17, 18 kilometres, that's commonplace to run in an AFL game, right?
Yeah, for the midfielders, definitely. Obviously, there's a whole lot of other positions, your backs and your forwards, but your midfielders would be clocking up those Ks, which is crazy.
So, you know, how often we talk about a sports in the region, and sports in the region being in a good place, but in order for them to go to that sort of next level, they need players to look up to. And when a Manchester United come to town, you know, kids doing all they can to get just an inkling of a view into wherever they were training, just to get a little view of their heroes. I know there's been conversations in the past with AFL teams to come either do pre-season here or maybe have a pre-season game. Are we any closer to that at the moment as well?
Not right at the moment, unfortunately. 2008, the Adelaide played Collingwood here in Gantoot, I think it was. So that was before my time, but that was a close link with Emirates sponsoring Collingwood. So I think there was a big push around that time, and then a lot of, obviously, financial factors and everything like that, it stopped. They're also now starting to target China and India, which is not great for us over here, but I'm still trying to push those angles. A game won't be happening soon, but training camps, like as you said, Port Adelaide were here a few years. Hawthorn were looking at coming, but cancelled last minute. We recently just also had the Bashahuli Academy. Bashahuli's a Muslim player back in Australia, quite proud Muslim, and he brought 15 boys over here for a week-long leadership and training camp, and they're all Muslim children, so obviously we visited the Grand Mosque, which was a really cool thing for them, and they trained down in Abu Dhabi, so training thing and also a leadership program. So they'll come every year as well, so it'll be good to sort of, we'll get more, bit more promotion on that next year.
Games is a good place. Talking of promotion, if people want to find out more, if they'd like to try their hand, their arm, their legs, their head at all things Aussie Rules, what's the best way for them to go about that?
You go find us on Facebook, AFL Middle East, and also AFLMiddleEast.com is our website. That's probably the best way you'll find all the information.
Also, just going back to the all things Asian Cup as well. It's interesting, isn't it? Because, you know, when we, the media, are involved in events like this, and it's usually quite sort of closed door in terms of access to players and access to teams and everything. They don't seem to have that Asian Cup. They seem to be quite open, don't they?
Certainly are. Yeah, if you pop on down, it's because I think you're absolutely right to point that out, Tom. I think an awful lot of it comes down to just that perhaps they've not had the media exposure before. It's not like we're dealing with a Manchester United where you're dealing with media from all around the world. And not to be disrespectful to the players or the nations that are competing, but a lot of them are keen to push what they're doing from a footballing standpoint in their country. So I know we've been talking to the Philippines national team and the PR contact for that has been very accommodating. I said, listen, we want to tell the story of the Philippines making their debut in this tournament. And that is the same for an awful lot of countries. And it's good to see, and long may that continue. And what it does do, it helps tell the story.
Indian team being very open.
Indian team being fantastic. Yeah. I mean, Sunil Chhetri, the captain there, he's been on social media and using social media as a vehicle for change and for good. You know, I know that the organisers ran a little "Why do Indians hate football?" It was a little tongue in cheek, but it was just to try and say, "Hey, listen, we know kabaddi's big, we know field hockey's big, we know Virat and Co and the Indian cricket team are big, but you've got a football team here who are doing wonders for putting your country on the map. A 4-1 win over Thailand in their opener. Okay, they came unstuck a little against UAE on Friday, but they're making inroads, and it's great to see. And long may that continue. And what I do sincerely hope is that we are getting sellouts at the big games involving the countries and around this region, the Saudi Arabias, the UEs, the Indias. Let us hope as we go throughout this tournament, the more the narrative picks up, the more that we, the media, can do in telling these stories, that we do start to see more and more people turn out, because it is the Asian Cup. It's the equivalent of the Copa America, the European Championships. After the FIFA World Cup, it's the second biggest tournament that this UE country could host. So, yeah, I think 7 days in, it's a great start. Positives out of it, some wonderful games, some real good goals. Let's hope that momentum continues all the way through to the final on February the 1st.
Bernie, it's always a pleasure getting you here on the show. All the best with all things sport in the coming weeks as well. And just one more as a proud Aussie as well. It's round about this time. I mean, there's fewer better places to be than up here from our broadcast position round about this time. Okay, yeah, we've all brought a hoodie with us tonight because it might get a little bit cold because, you know...
We've been here too long.
I brought you one, love. Don't worry about
that.
You know.
Thank you. Cheers for that, Tom.
I packed one for you. I know what you like. But at the same time, I mean, this time of year, casting your eyes down to Australia, Melbourne sort of area or thereabouts, there can't be that many better places to be in terms of sport. Obviously, we've got the ODI series ongoing at the moment. We've got the Aussie Open starting tomorrow. Formula One still starts
in March. Yep.
Still starts down in that neck of the woods, doesn't it?
Yep, in Melbourne as well. Yeah, we claim the sporting capital of the world, and I think it is quite known how much Australia loves sport, but where I'm from, Melbourne as well, as you said, with the, it's a great time of year with the Australian Open, and it's obviously summer down there, so the weather should be good. Sometimes it can be hit and miss down
the south. Hot though, haven't they?
Yeah, but that's the thing. It could be 45, and then it was 45 the other day. It was 22 the next day. But that's the downside of living down south of Australia. But yeah, it's a great place to be. I always miss it, especially when there's massive sporting events leading in. Like March 21st is round one of the actual AFL, which is not far away, which is crazy to think. But
Big Bash is ongoing. That's really cool.
Big Bash, which is huge. Yeah, which is, it just keeps growing. They've done wonders with that down there. Which you can watch here as well on TV.
I'm pretty sure the Sevens, isn't it the Gold Coast Sevens? Isn't that
correct?
This time of year as well? It's early start of the year,
yeah,
isn't it?
Early. Yeah, in June, April, says Mark Archer from a distance. So, yeah, a lot going on down there. And I've had the privilege of popping on down a couple of times to Melbourne. Throw in the Melbourne Cup, November.
Spring,
I mean,
Carnival.
when you talk about sporting capitals, Melbourne is right up there. Football teams as well. You've got Melbourne City, you've got Melbourne Victory. I mean, jeepers, you're well catered for, whichever your sport
so
is.
So all you
there.
Need is the Socceroos to go on and retain the title, and then they've obviously set the agenda for the sporting glory this year. Go on and win the World Cup over in Japan.
Well, fingers crossed, that's the plan in the next 3 weeks. And yeah, hopefully we're there in Abu Dhabi on the Feb 1st. But yeah, we can't forget that the major tournament's here in the country at the moment, so all our eyes should be on that, and hopefully we get a lot of people going to matches and supporting the Socceroos.
So you see the numbers starting to churn over here. These boys obviously look at sport in many different ways, but what about Aussie to win the AFC in the Asian Cup, Aussie to win the ICC World Cup, Aussie to win the Rugby World Cup?
And the Ashes. You'd be a rich man. I'd be retiring, Tom, is what I would be doing if all of those come to pass. I've got a funny feeling that they won't, not. And Mark Archer's looking gleefully. He's about to bound on in. We're of course talking about the All Blacks from a rugby point of view, England and English conditions in the Ashes, Cricket World
Cup. Never underestimate the Aussies, isn't that the way about it, isn't it?
Yeah, we love a good fight. You never write us off.
Yeah, true. We won't be writing them off. I certainly will not. But listen, Matt, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you for sparing some time to pop on down to talk things, all things Aussie sport. And yeah, best of luck to the Socceroos.
Thank you, and thanks for having me.
That is the voice of Matt Byrne.
Good on you, Matt. Thanks so much indeed for that. Make sure you get in touch and find out more about how you can get your hands on tickets for the forthcoming games in the Asian Cup. There are a couple of games to look forward to a little later on. We're all over those. It's halftime in the Premier League. It's halftime down in La Liga as well. Early kickoff down there. There's live action from the world of cricket and, of course, rugby. So keep it locked here on Dubai I-103.8.
The Grill, live from Barasti, bringing you the biggest sports stories right now.
Ah, you come back to us mid-giggle. Reason being, not just because Mark Archer's arrived. He does engender a little bit of banter and hilarity every time he walks into a room, but he's got a story to tell as well. I'm going to get onto that story in just a few moments' time. It's going to be the Archer story, where he's been, why he's late, and we're going to find out more about that in just a few moments. So get some updates, though, after our conversation with Matt Byrne. If you want to find out more about the Asian Cup, then get yourself onto the official websites there. If you want to find out more about what Matt and all the team down at the AFL are doing down here as well, then you can find out plenty more as well online. Let's go to Matt Fortune. He's here with us. He's keeping an eye on the Premier League. They're back out on the field.
Yeah, we're just about to kick off the second half. I think we last touched base at about 41 minutes gone. And the last 4 minutes of that first half was all West Ham, Tom. This has been a really interesting game. I'm not going to say it's been the most entertaining. It's not been end-to-end. But there, as I said earlier, just been real pockets of really high-class football. I'm looking at the second half and I'm really thinking there's definitely got to be goals in it. And I think they're going to be good goals. And I think with the momentum not being seized by anybody, it's certainly one to keep an eye on. And we've just kicked off.
We'll keep an eye on that one. Second half of the early kickoff in the Premier League. There is an early kickoff over in Spain as well. Some of the The lower lights of Spanish football are in action down there. Levante's in action, are they?
It's Leganés. Leganés is in action against Huesca. And I'm sure there are many Huesca fans out there that are glued to the radio sets listening to this little update. But Leganés, they lead Huesca by a goal to nil. 73 minutes when Youssef N. Nesri popped up with the goal for Leganés. So it is 79 minutes on the clock over in La Liga. The early kickoff, Leganés 1, Huesca 0. Later on this evening, Valencia take on Real Valladolid, Girona take on Alaves, and it's Villarreal taking on Getafe.
We're half an hour into the early kickoffs over in the European Champions Cup. Leinster and Toulouse are locked at 3 apiece at the moment. Montpellier take an early lead against Newcastle Falcons in that game. Bristol are well and truly in control against Krasnoyarsk at the moment. Krasnoyarsk. Bristol leading them by 53 points to 9. Half an hour in on that one. Could be a long afternoon for the Romanian team. Let's go over to Mark Archer, who has joined us. And before I ask him what he's been up to, let's find out what's happening in the cricket, Archie Arch.
A couple of cricket scores from earlier today. Of course, live cricket taking place in South Africa. It's Pakistan's taking on the third test against South Africa in Johannesburg. And it's the South Africans with a dominant lead at the moment. They're 41 for 2 in their second innings. They lead Pakistan by 118 runs after being Pakistan were dismissed earlier today for 185. So South Africa 262 in their first innings, 41 for 2 in their second innings, and Pakistan dismissed earlier today for 185. So the lead for South Africa is 18 runs there with 8 wickets remaining. The game is pretty well advanced only in session 3 of day 2. And that result also earlier today from the Sydney Cricket Ground, the first ODI was Australia that win by 34 runs. But we do have some goal action from London.
Tom, or should I do?
I was watching. Silly old me, I was listening to Mark Archer of all people.
If I can lift my spirits, it's not been a good start to the second half for my beloved Arsenal. And West Ham lead, we've got 47 and a half minutes on the clock. West Ham came out of the block. Said Kolasinac got the first yellow card of the game, taking down Felipe Anderson. From that free kick, it was the Bosnian who then headed over to give away a corner. And then from there, just to compound everything, it was he again who failed to clear properly at the near post. His weak header went straight to the feet of Samir Nasri. Brilliant all afternoon. Way too much time on the edge of the six-yard box to square a ball to Declan Rice, who had the freedom of the area and just buried one into the top corner. 1-0 West Ham.
Lovely finish. Yeah, I tell you what, Tom, Declan Rice, it's my understanding that Pep Guardiola has taken a fancy to this boy and that he would love to take him to Manchester City. City scouts keeping a close eye on him. Very similar to Eric Dier. I'll be very honest, I was at Anfield on the opening weekend of the season to watch West Ham take on Liverpool, and Declan Rice was ran a merry dance that day by Liverpool's midfield three. He looked off the pace. He looked like a centre-half who was asked to do a man's job in midfield. His evolution since then has been incredible. A little bit like Eric Dier at Tottenham. Not blessed with great pace. What he is blessed with, though, is a wonderful reading of the football match, and that's what Pep Guardiola looks for. He looks for a high, high footballing IQ. That young man has got it. He has been vetted by Ireland. Mick McCarthy made it his number one task to have a talks with Declan Rice to convince him to nail his colours to the Republic of Ireland mast. Gareth Southgate is an interested observer as well. I've got a funny feeling Declan Rice will be an England international before too long. Fine player, fine goal. I did say at the start of the show this afternoon, I fancied West Ham to get something today. As things stand, they're doing just that. It's West Ham 1, Arsenal 0.
Early days, very early days. Mark Archer, back to the football.
Yeah, back to the football.
The football. Well, I would like to be talking the football. I was listening to cricket and I missed
the goal. I'll give you that result earlier today from the Sydney Cricket Ground. Australia having a victory in the first one-day international. They've defeated India by 34 runs. Australia 288 for 5 in their 50 overs. India fell short 254 for 9 despite a brilliant century by opener Rohit Sharma 133 and a hard hit 51 by MS Dhoni. It's a good win for the Aussies by 34 runs. So Australia won the first ODI, and South Africa look in a dominant position in the third test match against Pakistan.
Now, Archie, kind of you to join us. You were scheduled to be here from 4 o'clock. You had to put in a panicked call to the boss, Chris McCarthy, a little earlier on today. Do you want to tell us all why?
Well, I've been down at Sediot Beach Golf Club the last 3 days. I wasn't expecting to be there 3 days.
Yeah, you couldn't have guessed.
Yeah. In fact, Archie, do pose for a photo on this. We'll stick it up on our Insta because it's easy to see you've been on the golf course.
I wasn't expecting to be there for 3 days. That's why I committed to the grill. But I was playing in the Pro-Am event of the Fatima Bin Mubarak Ladies Open, the Ladies European Tour event. And it's a Pro-Am format that after 56 pairs play. So you're paired up with a pro. You play for 2 days, and if you make the top 15 pairs, you play the final day. Me being a non-great golfer thought, well, I'm pretty safe bet to be at Barasti on a Saturday afternoon, well-researched, ready to go, but I made the cut, despite all expectations. And there I was today playing my third round of some consecutive golf and doing okay. I think we finished fifth in the team's event, and my partner, Nicole Broche-Larsen, finished tied for third. So we did okay, but I'm looking physically, emotionally, mentally spent. I'm done.
But did you enjoy it?
It was great fun, and you know, I was thinking about it on the way up here, and I've played in a few of these Pro-Am events before, and usually the Pro-Am event for the men or for the ladies is the day before the actual event takes place. It's on a Wednesday if the golf event starts on a Thursday, and it's three of your buddies or clients, or you put together with a group and you play with a pro, and it's kind of like a practice round for them. So it's good fun, you're up close and personal with a professional, but they're kind of going through the motions. Sometimes they'll hit two balls, they'll practice their chipping. A lot of them don't want to be there with the amateurs. It's a slight on their golf sort of preparation for the week. But this was a different format. We were part of the event. The ladies were playing their professional tournament for prize money, for world ranking points. And that partnered with the likes of me, looking for my ball in the rough.
I think I found it. Hang on, just hold on a minute. I'll be with you in a minute. Was it over here? I'm sure it went in here.
Can I drop it here? Can I kick it out? It's a great, but there's not many sports. If you think about all the sports where you can get actually in the middle of the event and play as the event is ongoing, there's nothing that really compares to it. So you're up close and personal with the Ladies European Tour, and they are playing in the event. So it is an amazing sort of pinch yourself moment to think that I've just spent three rounds playing golf with some of the top ladies European Tour. It's fantastic.
Can I ask a quick question, Mark Archer?
Are you going to ask why my caddy didn't show up yesterday, Mr. Chris McCarty? Are you going to answer that? Celtic, you were claiming. Celtic are in town, he said. I said, who are Celtic? Who cares?
Oof. Seven times on a bounce, Scottish.
You had the chance to be on my bag during a European Tour event, Chris McCarty. You turned it down. Once in a lifetime.
Even if Greening Morton were in town, I think I'd have rather popped on down to watch them train, Mark Archer. But you've got to answer this question. Were you wearing sunglasses all week?
I often get criticised by my wife for not wearing sunglasses in the sun here, so I have been protecting my face. I have caught some sun. The back of my calf muscles are sizzled red, and I have definitely got some sun on the face, but you've got to protect yourself in the warm winter climate here, Chris McCarty. So am I wearing what I call in the rest of the world a farmer's tan or a golfer's tan? I'm sure there's some red showing through.
I can attest to the fact that you are indeed sporting a golfer's tan. But a picture on the way on Instagram soon.
But I must tell you, so it is quite intimidating playing with the ladies and playing with them, because you have to obviously try and perform to the best of your ability. But here we are on the first day, and we were in pairs, and my playing partner, the other amateur in our group of four, doesn't show up. And so he's the one guy out of 56 who was a miscommunication and a breakdown. And he's playing with Cheyenne Woods, who's
Niece
of Tiger Woods. So one of the high-profile ladies playing in the event. So he doesn't show up. So now it's me, my partner, Nicole, and Cheyenne Woods playing as a three ball. And so I've played in a few of these pro-ams before. I've played enough sport to know that, you know, you're in pressure situations and you get nervous, and that's a good thing. But your name gets announced on the tee. So up on the first on the tee is me, Mark Archer. And there's a splattering of applause from two people and a dog clap their hands. And I get up there and my heart's beating and I'm nervous. And you know what I do? I swing so fast. I've got a fast cricketer's golf swing anyway, the speed of light. So I slowed it down to like three times the speed of light.
Killed the tee announcer.
I didn't kill the tee announcer, but I almost missed the ball. It went about 4 yards off the tee.
No.
So I walked up to it, picked it up, put it in my pocket.
Pulled your shorts down.
And went straight to the second hole. No, the thing is, you didn't have to hit it past the ladies' tee because we all teed off at the same tee box. But if there was a ladies' tee 10 yards forward, then I may have had to do that. But it was probably the worst shot I played in three rounds of golf. and there were people there, and luckily no one had a GoPro, no one had a camera on me at that stage, because it would have been circulating in social media. But
once,
it was
once you're round going momentum and you started moving up the day Saturday, obviously, you know, going up the leaderboard. Then all of a sudden CNN were all over it, and there was a live feed. We'd been mic'd up.
Hey, dry for show, putt for dough, made a birdie today, a couple of good pars, rocketed up the team list. You know, it was good fun. But yeah, congratulations to the organisers down there to get this format out there with the pros and the amateurs playing. And yeah, it's been a good 3 days.
And it was Charlie Hull who would emerge victorious.
Yeah, I can
well.
Tell you that Charlie Hull has won the event, 8 under par for the English lady. She had a great one-shot victory from Marianne Skarpnold from Norway. And then it's quite a bunch field, a lot of players at 3 under par. But I can tell you yesterday the wind was blowing in Sadia. It was so tough. If it had been a normal round of golf with my buddies, I wouldn't have played. It was blowing that hard, and it was really, really tough and taxing. You could tell how, you can just understand how mentally tough it is to grind your way through a round of golf. When things aren't going well, you have to be patient. It was really fascinating talking to the likes of Cheyenne Woods, what during her mental process, just playing around with them. But it was really good fun. Really,
and this is something of a sort of precursor to a festival of golf here in the region, isn't it, over the next couple of weeks. So we've had that, and then obviously we've got the HSBC
next
weekend.
Well, I can tell you who's in town. It's Chris's good mate, Mr. Gary Player, because tomorrow is the GPI, the Gary Player Invitational, also at Sadia Beach Club. So Gary Player, the Black Knight himself, was there yesterday. He is there tonight doing a ceremony at the Louvre. And that
a few
event...
push-ups as well, probably.
Probably, and a few crunches, as you do. But Gary Player is in town for the GPI tomorrow, and then the action gets underway at the Abu Dhabi National Course on Wednesday. So it's a Wednesday to Saturday event this year because of the AFC in the Abu Dhabi HSBC Golf Championship.
Yep.
So the likes...
We're doing the agenda down there on the Wednesday. I thought they've got it all wrong. I kept quiet because I'm more happy doing it down there. So I just kept stum, but I didn't realise that was the first day.
Yes, Saturday, conclusion of the Abu Dhabi HSBC Championship. A week today. We will have a winner of that. So, yeah, it's just a busy time. AFC Asian Cup. You've got the Fatima Bint Mubarak that is now wrapped up. The Gary Player Invitational. What else have we got? The Standard Chartered Dubai Marathon.
Straight into the Desert Classic, though, isn't it?
Straight in, yeah. Desert Classic. Then over in Saudi.
3 weeks?
No, it's straight in, following week, isn't it?
Yeah, so, I mean, they literally are sort of moving, which makes sense, you know. It makes sense because
absolutely,
players are they don't need to be flying out and then coming back in.
Exactly that. Finish up on the Saturday. Sunday, they'll probably lay low, rest their weary limbs, then get down here, look at Emirates Golf Club, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, 3 days to play, obviously, the Pro-Am, etc. And then they go again on Thursday.
And some big names in town for the Abu Dhabi event?
Massive events, yeah. Not world number one anymore. That's Justin Rose. But Brooks Koepka is here, of course. He's had some wonderful success over the past 12 months. DJ Dustin Johnson himself, who hits the ball a country mile, he is here. Tommy Fleetwood, two-time winner, looking for a third successive Falcon Trophy. So yeah, the big names in the world of golf are here. Of course there is no Rory McIlroy, that's well documented, but yeah, Dustin Johnson, Brooks Koepka, Tommy Fleetwood, Henrik Stenson and the likes, they will all be down in the capital.
And of course they've been elevated to a Rolex Series event this year, so the prize money is almost doubled to $7 million. So there's a lot of world ranking points at stake. Great massive purse for all these players, incentive for them, and it's a box office start to the European Tour or the Desert Swing, as we call it.
And a new look to the Amiga Dubai Desert Classic as well, 30th anniversary this year, a few changes down there.
Yeah, it's not just a few, some big changes. That place is looking incredible. I popped on down on Thursday evening just to have a little look, just to see what it was all about. The brand new hospitality is a real feature, I've got to say. There is Barasti, in actual fact, getting involved on the 5th. Yeah. Now, I hope I'm not getting myself in trouble for unveiling this or revealing this, but the little setup that they've got on the 15th green, it then overlooks the 16th tee off box. It's a little bit like Waste Management in Phoenix. They're having a bit of a party on there. Barasti will be supplying all of the food and beverage there. I think they are sponsoring that little area. It holds up to about 400 people. I'm expecting that to be a bit bonkers. I'm expecting that to go off on a Friday afternoon. The organisers are kind of welcoming that a little bit. They want, I guess what they want to do is to broaden it out a lot, like the other events have done. It's not just a golfing aficionado who can appreciate the golf and appreciate all the amenities that are on offer, and I'm looking forward to that. I'm looking forward to the new look and feel of the Omega Dubai Desert Classic, celebrating its 30th anniversary, of course. And Bryson DeChambeau, Henrik Stenson, Colin Montgomery, Ernie Els, Sergio Garcia, previous winners, some great names as well, will be taking to the Emirates Golf Course from January 24th through to the 27th. So
lots
a fantastic
to
tournament
look forward
ahead.
To. Keep it locked here on Dubai Eye 103.8. We are involved with both of those events that we've just been talking about there. Your details, opportunities to win, and much, much more, all online at DubaiEye1038FM.com and much, much more. You're listening to Dubai Eye 103.8. We are going to go to a short break. When we come back, more from the team.
This is The Grill. Get involved with Dubai Eye on Facebook.
You're listening to Dubai Eye 103.8. We are broadcasting live from Barasti, where the game is always on. Good crowd in here down to Barasti tonight. That is honouring what is and has been a good... Well, it depends which way you're looking at this one, really. But a good, well, it's been a good game, hasn't it, Matt Fortune?
Oh, yeah, it's been a great game. And it's just not been a very enjoyable one from an Arsenal fan perspective. And even in the 15-odd minutes since the goal, there's been precious little of the Gunners to really threaten. It's a bit of a concern. It's roll the dice time. As has become his habit, Unai Emery has made a double change. He normally does it either at half-time or early in the second half. He's done it before the hour mark. Off goes Granit Xhaka. Not been great. And off goes Shkodran Mustafi, who is just not good enough in general. And on comes Aaron Ramsey and Lucas Torreira. So that means a little bit of a shift in the formation. Ramsey will push a little bit further forward. Hang on, Tom, we've got a chance here. It's Aubameyang. And he's just put that wide. That is Arsenal's first good chance, I would say, in about half an hour. It's come from the legs of Aaron Ramsey, as I say, recently introduced. And as I was saying, sorry, before I was distracted by that, is that that means Lacazette and Aubameyang now pushing a little bit more central and then Ramsey buzzing in behind them. So we'll see what happens. But from a Hammers perspective, Tom, I'm starting to think that this might be 3 points. And if Arsenal fail to pick up anything, victory for Manchester United tomorrow against Spurs, my least favourite fixture of the game when I'd really like neither team to win. Manchester United need a two-goal swing and they will climb above Arsenal into fifth.
Let's go to the Asian Cup because the second game is underway. Only 20 minutes into this one, but goals already. Chris
McCullough. Yes. Vietnam taking on Iraq, as you rightly point out, only midway through the opening half of this one, but I can already tell you it's Yemen 0, Iraq 2. Mohamed Kadim and Bashir Rehsan on the score sheet for Iraq. So Yemen 0, Iraq 2. A little earlier today, we did see Vietnam lose to Iran by the same scoreline, by 2-0. It was Sardar Azmoun on the score sheet, the Rubin Kazan striker, who has been linked with a number of clubs in the Premier League, in the Bundesliga as well. His 2 goals seeing Iran to victory. And as things stand, 23 minutes on the clock, it's Yemen 0, Iraq 2.
We're going to talk tennis in just a few moments' time with the boys. Want to get their thoughts on some big news ahead of the Australian Open. Not before, though, I put you in the picture of some breaking news. Leganés have taken the lead against Huesca. It's 1-0, fifth minute of injury time being played down there in the opening game of Spanish La Liga this afternoon. Chris McCarthy, surprised by the Andy Murray decision?
No, absolutely not. Not the decision. The timing of the press conference, maybe. Yeah, maybe, in all honesty, but that yesterday, when the news came through and I've watched it from start to finish, and I'm not going to lie to you, I was a little emotional watching it, because there you have a man who has been struck down in his prime. The news, and I should put, the listeners perhaps aren't aware of what we're talking about, the news yesterday, Andy Murray, in a press conference heading into the Australian Open down in Melbourne, which begins on Monday, and he was asked just a pretty straightforward question: Andy, how are you feeling? Let's have a listen now, because it gets very, very emotional. And Andy Murray telling the story, I think, it does just that.
Yeah, so not feeling good. Yeah, obviously, been struggling for a long time. I've been in a lot of pain for what's been probably about 20 months now. I've pretty much done everything that I could to, you know, to try and get my hip feeling better, and hasn't helped loads. I'm in a better place than I was 6 months ago, but you know, still in a lot of pain. It's been tough.
Andy, does that mean that this might be your last tournament?
Yeah, I think there's a chance of that. Yeah, for sure. Yeah, there's a chance of that for sure, because, yeah, like I said, I'm not sure I'm able to play through the pain, you know, for another 4 or 5 months. My plan, kind of in middle to end of December during my training block, you know, I spoke to my team and I told them that, you know, I can't, you know, I can't keep doing this, and that I needed to have like an end point, because I was sort of just playing with no idea of when the sort of the pain was gonna stop. And I felt like making that decision, you know, I said to my team, look, I think I can kind of get through this until Wimbledon. That is where I would like to, that's where I would like to stop playing. But I'm also not certain I'm able to do that.
Extraordinary press conference, and I've watched it over it a couple of times here. A number of points that I'm sure all of you would like to make on that one. I suppose the one thing for me is, you know, there are two stories here. There is Andy Murray talking about his body that is not, and his physical fitness that is not at the standard, or not giving to him the standards that he wants. But then what we see are the emotional and the mental frailties there. So the question, I suppose, we know that he's not physically ready for it. Is he emotionally ready to play?
Yeah, emotionally he's all over the shop, Tom, because he's put his body through the ringer in order to try and get back to his peak fitness. There has been an awful lot written about that young man over the course of the past 24 hours, some wonderful pieces, and I urge for you tennis fans, and even if you're not a tennis fan, to seek them out, because Jonathan Liu, I know, has written a wonderful piece, Martin Samuel likewise, and the thing that I guess all of them, that all of them really kind of illustrate, is that Andy Murray had no real right to win any of the slams or have the success that he has done in the greatest of tennis eras. Roger Federer, Rafael Nadal, Novak Djokovic, the three greatest male players, in my opinion, we've ever seen. 51 Grand Slam titles between the three of those. That Andy Murray is coming up to, and his career is now, by all intents and purposes, it will be over. Whether that's at the end of this Australian Open, or whether he can, you know, sell a tape and really put his body together to take him through to Wimbledon, remains to be seen. But for him to win three majors, for him to win two Olympic gold medals back to back, 2012 and 2016, to do that is a remarkable achievement, Tom. And he's done that, and I think this is where it kind of boils down to, he's done that by outworking each and every individual. He has wrung everything that his body could have given him. He has been, and Andy Roddick said it on social media, he's one of the best tacticians that tennis has ever seen, I believe. More than that, though, he's also been one of the fittest. He has put his body through hell in order to compete at the very top with the likes of Roger Federer, Rafa Nadal and Novak Djokovic. The man is a hero, a Scottish hero certainly, a British sporting hero. There's been a lot said and written about whether he is the greatest British athlete of all time. I actually think he is, given what he's achieved in the greatest era. And it dawned on me, and I'll put this question to you boys, throwing it off a little bit. If we talk about Switzerland, the greatest sportsman or woman to ever come out of that country, it's Roger Federer. Or tennis. If we ask that question in Spain, you'd probably say Rafael Nadal. Again, tennis. Serbia, you'd probably say Novak Djokovic. And in the case of Andy Murray, no doubt in my mind, he is the greatest Scottish athlete, yes. British athlete, yes, as well. I put it out there.
Strange times over in tennis. Strange times down at the London Stadium as well. We move from Andy Murray to another massive Andy in the world of sport. Carol!
Indeed, it's a... What an odd couple of minutes, Tom. Arsenal, 1-0 down chasing the game, have made their final substitution at right back. Ashley Maitland-Niles has gone off and Hector Bellerin, returning from fitness, has come on. West Ham United, 1-0 up in what would be a massive, massive win for them, have taken off their most dangerous player in Sam El-Nasri. Marko Arnautović has also gone on, and big Andy Carroll has come on, and Robert Snodgrass. Who's the team going for the win here? The biggest side of that, though, to say, and we're just watching the replays, is that Marko Arnautović, and this is perhaps reading a little bit too much into it, both gloves off, a long, long walk to the dugout, waving with both hands to the crowd. Whether or not that was just appreciative of the round of applause he was getting from the fans. The fans obviously don't want him to leave. They certainly weren't going to boo him as he walked off. So maybe it was a response to that. But if you want to draw conclusions for a good headline tomorrow, that looked like a goodbye to me.
The gloves are off.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.